Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Daugherty, founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop, and I'd like to personally invite you to learn more about how you can be involved in this powerful three-day intensive. The next Gateway to Freedom Workshop is coming up April 1st through the 3rd. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity. Your hosts for Pure Sex Radio are Jonathan Daugherty and Stephen Cervantes. Jonathan is the director of Be Broken Ministries and founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop for Men. Stephen is the founder of the Hope Counseling Center. Visit us online at puresexradio.com. And now, please welcome Jonathan and Stephen on Pure Sex Radio.
Radio listeners, welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're so glad you decided to join us today. My name is Jonathan. I'm here with my good friend, Stephen. Hey, how are you, Stephen?
I'm well. Thank you, sir.
Good. Well, before we dive in, we're getting into the springtime, at least down here in Texas we are. And we would like to just remind you that we are a listener-supported broadcast, which means that the only way that this show gets distributed on our radio stations around the country and on podcasts around the world is through generous donations from listeners like you. So if you have been blessed by what we're doing, or if you feel like it's important that we have this space on the radio airwaves where we are educating or training men and educating women on biblical sexual purity, we'd invite you to come alongside of us and partner with us in this ministry. To learn about all the different ways that you can partner with us, just go to puresexradio.com and click on the Make a Donation button, and you can learn more. Or if you don't have, if you can't do that, you can always call our toll-free number, which is 1-800-49-PURITY, and we'll give you more information about our contact information at the end of the program as well. Well, Stephen, we're going to start a three-part series here, really on the idea of what are these thought mile markers that happen in a person's life when they're really starting to take seriously, hey, what do I do to be a sexually pure person? You know, how do I become a sexually pure person? How do I walk in purity? And you kind of compiled these lists of all the different thoughts that seem to just kind of come up. And these are lists that you've taken from people in your counseling ministry as well as in our Gateway workshops. And obviously, we're not going to disclose any sort of personal information. There's not going to be any sort of identifiable information in this. But it's amazing to me the quantity of comments you've compiled of just what seems to pop into a person's head as they're really trying to explore this issue of purity. So why don't you take it from there and just sort of tell us how you got here and where we're going to go.
So I have captured statements and ideas and concepts, and I just want to roll them out because sooner or later most individuals on the journey will think these things or feel these things or make these observations. So we're at a retreat, and I'm talking about how we are a product of the family we came from, sometimes directly trained by them and sometimes indirectly trained by them. So if we went to our room to get away, well, we were trained to get away, not directly, but indirectly. Or if they were fighting and I went in there and started telling jokes and being the clown and standing on my head and making them laugh, then it was my job to diffuse the situation and be helpful to my family by making them laugh and bring the escalation down. And so I'm challenging these men to think about, you know, the impact of what family you lived in and how it shaped you, either directly or indirectly. And we're walking and we're not talking and we're just being quiet out in God's creation. And then we stop, and this man says, I just had an aha moment. He said, my value is not established by them, my family, where I came from, those years I lived through. I have felt devalued, less valued, lesser value coming from that culture, my family, than I realize now as an adult. That was their influence, but that I have tremendous value as a child of God, as an adult, as a male, as a human being, as one able to give and share. And so the question is, where do you draw your value? And if they esteemed you, that's great value. But if it was not good and you said, I'm stupid, or I'm never going to amount to much, or life works for other people but not me, or there's something wrong with me, I ask you to think about that and move, if you can, to his aha moment. My value is not established by anyone else but my Heavenly Father.
Yeah, and I would follow up on that exactly what you're saying. Our value is really found in our identity in our Creator, you know, the one who made us. He made us in His image, and so ultimately our value, our real worth at the core of who we are, comes from Him. And that's really important. So that's a powerful breakthrough moment, but it's amazing how difficult it can be for some people to get to that moment, because there's such a subconscious training that goes on in those family environments that a lot of times, until you have somebody sort of walk alongside you and start to ask some questions and help you explore some of those areas, you don't even realize the degree to which you've bought into those lies of being devalued by those in your family. And so it's important to have some people that can help you sort of uncover that.
And I think you have to go from that aha moment to releasing some pain and almost practicing a new discipline of receiving worth and value and releasing devalue.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's a lot of shame work. You have to do a lot of work in shame, because that when you feel devalued, boy, that just brings up a whole sense of shame that you're worthless and that you can't receive love. You can't be valued.
So number two, we've got a 10-point list here for today's discussion. Let's see how many we get through. Number two is, porn makes me feel so alive. I want to process that with you. Why does porn make us feel so alive? These are quotes. And this gentleman said, I just feel so alive. I feel young and free, and there's such arousal and pleasure. And it's like, hey, I go to work and work a regular job, and there really isn't, it's a tight fit to make the money work, and the kids demand a lot, and the car's not in that great a shape. I need tires. And so I live and I work and I pour out, but in porn, I feel so alive.
Well, I think part of that is because it's directly interacting with your sexuality. And if you think about it, well, our sexuality is where life comes from. I mean, you make life through your sexuality, but also not even just the biological aspect. There is something, I think, incredibly powerful in our sexuality that goes beyond anything else in our being. There is nothing, I think, in our being that can raise us to a place of a height of arousal and engagement and experience like our sexuality can. And so pornography appeals to that. Now, it appeals to it in a very unhealthy way. But the fact that it's still engaging with our sexuality, I think it has a, it creates that powerful response. And so compared to anything else in your life, yeah, it may look like, well, I feel alive. Because it gets you to that height of excitement and thrill and experience that really nothing else in life can...
Right. Nakedness, youthful, beauty, at your peak, you know, sexually. I mean, that's what porn is designed to do, right? Is to somehow recreate that experience. And then you have the chemicals in your brain firing off and your mood shifting, and there's something exciting and stimulating about porn. And I think we should be honest about it. And when this man said that, I thought, that's true. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like sipping poison. And at the moment, it tastes good, but it slowly, you know, eats your insides out or something.
Yeah, it's a facade. So it's like, it's kind of like those old Western movies, you know, where you've got the main street and it looks all like a real place, but you pan back far enough and you go,
yes,
those are just boards. They're not actually. And so that's kind of what porn is. Porn puts a face on sexuality that looks good, but it's not the real thing. It's not how God designed it to be the real thing. And so if makes, and I think the key to this guy's statement is porn makes me feel alive.
Mm.
And I think there are a lot of things in life that can make us feel alive when they are actually killing us. This is a poison example. You may have put it in Kool-Aid and it tastes great.
Right. Oh, that's
it
good.
It feels good, but it's killing me.
And there was a lady on, they were doing some program on TV, and this lady, oh, it's about what odd things people eat. She likes Ajax cleaner or Comet cleaner, one of those really caustic, and she puts it on her hand and she licks it like some candy or something, and she eats small amounts over time, and then they showed her teeth. She said, it's not doing anything to me. Then my doctor says I'm fine. And it showed her teeth, and all of her teeth had rotted. They had to put new cosmetic teeth in place.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's what it is. It's like eating Comet. Sure, it maybe give you a thrill to do, but it's killing you. Mm-hmm. So, number three. The first time I used porn, I felt like the whole world was watching me. That's an interesting statement, because I think we have to put it together with the last one. I think two things happen. When you find porn for the first time, you are like super alive. You are heightened in awareness. You are awoken in terms of sexuality, and it's like this giant wow. But then there's this sense that this is not right. And the whole world is watching you.
Yeah, it's like you get that's the sense of guilt, I think, that can come over some people. And the idea that, and I almost think, you know, in terms of this, I almost get the sense that this guy in his first time of seeing porn, it's as if he could hear all these voices or see all these people that were just kind of like, you know, maybe mumbling and whispering about, oh, look what he's doing, you know, that kind of stuff. Where it makes a person wonder, what's not quite right about this? And I'm not going to assume that this is everybody's experience, because I've met plenty of guys that their first porn experience, they didn't have that sense of like everybody watching them. They were just like, I know I'm in the closet and I'm looking at dad's porn and there's no big, you know, it's not like it's, they didn't sense
or
that.
Like a heavy guilt. I interpret this as a real heavy guilt. It's mm-hmm. like, I know this is wrong. This isn't right. Something in my being says no, run away. And something in my being says yes, grab for more.
And just keep in mind, everything that we're bringing up in these three broadcasts are various mile markers that we see, thought mile markers, where people, you have these thoughts that pop up where you have these remembrances and you experience these things. And so we're not saying that this is going to be... general to everyone's experience, but what we are saying, or specific to everyone's experience, but what we are saying is these are the comments we've heard, and I think they will connect with plenty of our audience to be able to see, because I know there's people out there now that right now are going, that was my experience. I did feel like everybody was watching me.
Right.
And
or
what
I
do you
should
do with
stop,
that guilt?
Or this is bad, or I don't want anybody to catch me doing it, all that experience. That's
and
right.
You know, the thing is, I think that's an appropriate response. What generally happens, though, is to these young kids is their first time porn use, when they have that appropriate response, which is guilt, which says, I'm outside of how God designed my sexuality, they're too young to know what to then do with that. They don't know how to. They don't know to talk to anybody about that. They don't know how to process that. They don't know
that's a good
how
point.
How to then take that feeling of darkness into the light and talk to their parents or to a pastor or anything like that.
Because they fear they'll get in trouble.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Well, you did it too. Why were you out there? What's wrong with you? And it's like, okay, just be quiet about the whole thing. So, number four on our list is this confession. And it just like hit me in the gut when he said it. It was how he said it. He said, I realize now, as an adult male, looking back on my youth, that I used girls for sex. Mm. I used girls. Explorers of the female persuasion, young people on a mission, God's creation, girls who liked art and beauty and music and innocence. I used girls, just other people learning about life. They were not hardened women. As a young man,
you know, that statement,
said,
yeah, that statement to me, that statement sums up pornography and the principle behind pornography. The idea of using, the idea of using innocence, girls, and the
yes.
idea of exploiting sexuality.
And taking,
exactly,
and stealing.
It's a taker's mentality. I did not see these girls as beautiful creations, daughters of the King of Kings. No, they were my sexual toys. They were my sexual they were to be used for my sexual pleasures. And it, man, it was what a taker's mentality, you know. And I think this is the message ultimately underlying all pornography in all of its forms. Take. Exploit sexuality for your own personal selfish gain.
Well, and there's such sadness and there's pause and silence kind of that goes with this, because I think he's taking ownership, and I think there's sorrow in this statement when he had an aha moment.
Well, and you know, the thing is, you know, the obvious sadness is for the girls in that statement.
Yes.
I also feel great sadness for him, because it means that he has swallowed hook, line, and sinker the lie of pornography. Because I see behind that statement a guy who in his developmental years was assuming that using girls for sex would bring about some type of true satisfaction in his life.
Mm.
And here's a guy who ends up at one of our events realizing that did not fulfill. That did not
right.
ultimately lead where the lie told me it would lead.
And I needed to use your body so I could explore my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But you had to be a victim on my sexual journey.
And then, and both lives get damaged through that.
That's true. So number five is a statement you made that men love. It just came so clear to me this last retreat weekend, where several of the men said, that's it. I have to start my mornings with this three-word prayer to God. And this is what you said your prayer is in the morning. I need help.
Profound, right, people? if any of you have listened to the broadcast for a while, and Steven's known me for a while, I really like to keep things simple, because... For one thing, for my own life, I need things simple. But this has been a this was a profound mile marker in my own thinking. When early on in my own recovery and my own pursuit of purity, I started realizing it seems so trivial to call it an aha moment. But for me, it was an aha moment, because when you've lived the majority of your life thinking, I don't need help, like the way most addicts think, I can quit anytime I want, I don't need help. Oh, I can quit tomorrow, no problem. And we think we're in control. It is an aha moment when you realize I'm not in control, and I cannot do this thing called purity without help. And so that was profound for me. And so I try to pass it on to others and say, if you don't start every single day with a mental picture in your mind that you can't do it alone, then you're probably going to trip up somewhere along the day. We all need help.
Yes. And it's profound because it's me. It's about me. It starts with an I statement. I am talking to you, my Heavenly Father. And I have to tell you something. I have this great need, and only you can fill this need. So I, the creation, come needy and recognizing that what I've designed doesn't work, and I have been broken, thus the ministry name, be broken and honest. I've been broken, and I come to you with my need for help. Your help, your way, your vision, your truth. I need help. A simple prayer that's transforming lives. Mm-hmm. Number six. A man said to me during one of our discussions, he said, I am 98% good and 2% bad. I am 98% good. I'm not 30 or 40 or 50 or 60 or 70 or 80. I am 90. I am 98% good.
Well, the first thing that pops into my head on that statement is a little yeast works through the whole batch of dough.
So 2% yeast, bad yeast.
Exactly.
Mess up 98%.
So part of this is, you know, the idea that we have these, I think the aha moment in this, for this guy, if it wasn't what he realized at first, hopefully he would get to the place where he realized the previous thing we said, I need help. Because he's bought into this notion that somehow I'm 98% good and 2% bad. But what's been driving his life up till now? Obviously the 2%. So
a large 2%.
So it's like
it's growing.
So part of it may be exploring the fallacy in his thinking about his self-examination. Because quite honestly, when I look in the mirror today, I see nothing good in me apart from Christ. And so my thinking had to change. Because, you know what, early on, I probably would have thought the same thing. But I'm 98% good, only 2% bad. As I've grown in my walk with Christ and as I've grown in my pursuit of purity, I've realized when I look in the mirror, there's nothing good in me apart from Christ. And so I think I see in this statement a guy who's on a development of this thought mile marker that says, I need to re-examine my self-examination.
Well, and I think the point I take from this is, like, you know, it's hard to be 100% good.
Right.
You know, in any given minute, I could be bad for just 2 minutes, you know, and mess up everything. That doesn't seem fair, but okay. So we're going to keep moving. We got more to cover. One gentleman said, who I was not who I was. Don't you just love that line?
That's great. I love it because it really points out the deceptive nature of when you're walking in sin and when you're living a lie is, hey, who I was not who I was.
And who I told you I was not really who I was. I wasn't being honest. And sometimes I'm not even honest with me.
Yeah.
I try to look good, but I always know that 2%'s back there and growing and pulsing and calling.
That's a powerful statement of truth there.
One gentleman said, and we're on number 8, He said, I talked to the other boys in high school, and this was their sexual advice to me. Get as much sex as often as you can so you can get it out of your system.
You know, that's bad on so many levels. First of all, it's bad to just to say get sex, the idea of, again, the taker's mentality. Mm. But what's so bad about that is also to say that somehow by having sex, you quote-unquote get it out of your system.
Yeah.
Newsflash, kid, you're going to be sexual the rest of your life. I mean, you are a sexual being from the moment you are born to the moment that you die. And so to think that somehow, oh, just have more sex and you'll get it out of your system. You know, and this is, of course, advice coming from other teenagers who are just hormone-filled, and they think it's all about just whenever you have an urge, meet the need of that urge. And so, again, it gets a person into the mindset of saying every urge sexually needs to be met with some sort of release.
And you can get to the end of it. Just do more, 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 and you'll finally go, okay, I'm satisfied.
Right. Well, if that were true, porn would be out of business years ago.
So, bad advice. Mm-hmm. If you get that from a teen, if you hear a teen, squash it.
And that's good that he recognized that's bad advice.
So number 9 is, if I'm honest with myself, I have woven such a web of deceit, of lying and conning myself and others, and hiding and ritualizing and fantasizing and objectifying and using and deceiving myself and trying to do it by my own will. There's such a web of deceit that goes with my sexual struggle.
If you want to invite the most amount of stress in your life imaginable, begin to weave a web of lies. Just begin to lie to everyone you know. Cover up your greatest weakness, begin to lie, and in no time flat, you will be the most stressed out person on the planet. I mean, lies just invite stress.
Yes.
You know, I've heard it said before, when you tell the truth, that's all you have to remember. There's so much peace that can come in just being honest and telling the truth.
So number 10, and our final comment on this thought mile marker conversation is this. My marriage didn't fix me. I had a sexual struggle before my marriage. I got a little holiday from my sexual struggle while I explored marriage and married sexuality. And then when life got hard again and normal and average, my sexual struggle came back to rescue me. And so my marriage didn't fix me.
Well, folks, we're going to continue on with this conversation in the next two broadcasts as we just bring again some more of these thought mile markers that are things that pop into people's heads as they're working through what it means to walk every day in sexual thought purity. So we hope this has been beneficial to you. Obviously, if you want to talk more with us about your story and get some additional help, please contact us. We'll give you that information here in a moment. And we're glad you've been with us this week, and we look forward to having you back here again next week on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
You've been listening to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Learn more about our show at puresexradio.com. Thanks for tuning in to today's broadcast. We want to hear from you. This broadcast is not possible without the prayers and financial support of listeners like you. Our mailing address is coming up. Get your pens ready. You can also contact us by phone at 1-800-49-PURITY. That's 1-800-49-PURITY. Our mailing address for your notes and donations is Pure Sex Radio, 1800 Northeast Loop 410, Suite 401, San Antonio, Texas 78217. Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.